Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMoney.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. It's news to nobody that our planet has been ravaged by a pandemic since early 2020, and that more and more people in the developed world are being vaccinated to stop the effects of the COVID-19 coronavirus. But where did this vaccine come from? How was it developed? And who made it happen is less well known. Inside the Great Vaccine Race is the name of a new documentary that looks at the coronavirus itself, how the vaccines were developed, how they work, and why. It follows scientists in China, Brazil, Thailand, Canada, Germany, and the UK at a time when many of these countries were already locked down. It's produced and written by Dugald Maudsley, the multi-award-winning Canadian documentary filmmaker known for TV series like Myth or Science and Ancestors in the Attic, as well as documentaries like Jumbo, the Life of an Elephant Superstar. Inside the Great Vaccine Race is the opening episode of The Nature of Things, celebrating its 61st season, and is now streaming on CBC Gem. And I'm very pleased to have Dugald here with me in Toronto via Zoom to tell us more about this fascinating scientific documentary, Inside the Great Vaccine Race. Hi, Dugald. Thanks so much for meeting with me.
Hi, Daniel. Happy to be here.
So the vaccine is taken for granted now. Everybody knows about it, and almost everybody in this city, at least, have already received it. But this documentary starts long before anybody knew for sure whether or not they could produce a vaccine that would work. So how do you craft a documentary before you know how it's going to end?
Good question. Carefully. you have a very nervous broadcaster. All those kind of things, because we all like to know where we're going to end up before we start out, especially when you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to make a documentary. But we were really fortunate. We've been working with The Nature of Things for more than a decade. And we have a very brave and very gutsy executive producer named Sue Dando. And we thought that if anyone would be willing to take on a project like this, it would be her. And we were right. She realized, like we did, that this was really a frightening but also extremely historical moment, right? When something dramatic was happening that hasn't really happened for a century. And, you know, it was something that was going to change our lives, everybody's lives, kind of irrevocably. And that as a result, we should try to document it as best we could. And so we were really fortunate that Sue backed us, helped us, you know, with the money that we needed to make the film, and knew that it was going to be something that would, you know, not be shot in 3 or 4 months, that we would just have to hang in with this thing as long as it took to get somebody who created a vaccine. And, you know, when we started, people were talking about vaccines normally taking 5 to 15 years to develop. And everyone was hoping that we could get a vaccine made in 12 to 18 months. So, you know, it's possible that we could have been involved in this story for 18 months. And Sue was willing to support us. The Nature of Things was willing to support us. And so off we went.
So you cover a number of scientists around the world, but I understand from your documentary, there were more, as many teams as 250 working on this. So how did you choose who to follow? And did everyone you cover end up in the final version of this documentary?
Yeah, our biggest task at the beginning, and it fell to myself and our very talented co-producer and researcher, Monica Delmos, who we've worked with for years on many projects, it fell to the two of us to try to figure out, you know, what were the right teams to approach. And, you know, we were looking for teams around the world because collaboration was turning out to be a key theme. You know, you can't make a vaccine as fast as we wanted to unless scientists kind of dropped their guard and agreed to kind of share data with each other, which they did. So we wanted to have multiple teams in multiple places. We also wanted to have an array of different technologies, mRNA vaccines, like the one that BioNTech did, you know, different technologies like subunit particles. There are all sorts of different types. So we were trying to look at that. And of course, we wanted a Canadian team. That was really important to us. And then we had the big barrier, which was, well, is anybody going to let us film with them? I mean, it's the midst of a pandemic. They're rolling the dice on millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars in cost to develop a vaccine. And, you know, the possibility that we might bring with us an infection and really mess things up for them was a real possibility. So six teams agreed to let us in the door and follow their ups and downs for a year, maybe longer. We didn't know at that point. And we worked with them to trim our team down to, you know, one or two people going into their facility and following all the COVID-19 requirements. And, you know, I have to hand it to them. They were very gutsy and willing to let us do that. And in the end, with the nature of things, we focus on four of those six teams. But we have actually cut a feature length where we focus on all six, but we haven't yet found a broadcaster for that longer film. So the nature of things, which goes to air soon, will be the nature of things, which people will watch, is actually four teams.
So this is CIUT 89.5 FM, and I'm speaking with documentarian Dugald Maudsley about Inside the Great Vaccine Race. So this is a documentary all about science, and one of the most fascinating parts about it is about where the coronavirus most likely came from. And this sent your crew to the vast limestone caverns of Ratchaburi, Thailand, a home of millions of bats, millions of bats. The footage here has to be seen to be believed. And if any of the listeners are wondering or are looking for another reason to watch this documentary, it's the bats. But what are the scientists looking for there?
Well, first, I have to say you're right. The bat footage is stunning. 2.5 million bats in this limestone cave, which has, you know, a Buddhist temple on it and beside it. So we were lucky to film with a Thai scientist who was famous because she was the first to identify the coronavirus, the COVID-19 in Thailand. And one of the things that she does is she tries to find new coronaviruses and other new viruses before they make the jump from animal to humans. And we know that coronaviruses like the one that we dealt with, SARS-CoV-2, are also present in bats. And we know that coronaviruses don't hurt the bats. They live with them just fine. And so scientists are constantly assessing bats to see what type of coronaviruses they're carrying, and maybe prepare us in advance for those viruses before they make the leap from the bats to humans. And so we focused on a Canadian scientist who is at Cambridge University in the UK, Dr. Jonathan Heaney, who trained as a veterinarian at the University of Guelph. And he was doing something different from the rest of the teams that we were following. He was trying to create a pan-coronavirus vaccine. So a vaccine that would be capable of handling not only SARS-CoV-2 that we were dealing with, but also another coronavirus that might in the future make that leap from bats to humans. And so if it did, his vaccine would already be in place and could already protect us from that virus. Unfortunately, the reason Dr. Heaney felt this way is he thinks we'll face another pandemic in the future, that this is not the first event that we're going to have to deal with. And so he was looking to the future to try to create that vaccine.
That's a dark future, but with a bit of hope in it, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Many people are wondering how they did manage to come up with a brand new vaccine for previously unknown virus strain, seemingly out of nowhere. And as you mentioned before, with BioNTech, your documentary explains how previous research into mRNA by scientists Uğur Şahin and Özlem Türeci, I'm sure I pronounced it wrong, but the research at BioNTech, which ended up being the vaccine that we now know as the Pfizer vaccine. So where did it come from and what was it based on from the research in the past?
Yeah, the thing that really blew us away, the thing that we totally didn't expect, was that all of these scientists, all the teams that we followed, all had been doing work, sometimes on a previous vaccine, sometimes in the case of BioNTech, they were looking at cancer. A team that we followed out in Edmonton, also looking at cancer. What was crazy was that all these scientists had already prepared in a way, though they didn't realize it, had prepared for the coronavirus outbreak. And in the case of BioNTech, they had spent 20 years working on using RNA to fight cancer. And Ugur Shaheen, Professor Shaheen, like in January, as he was reading an article, he told me, I did an interview with him because we were doing everything remote control. I did an interview with him at 4 a.m. my time in order to talk to him about how this all came about. And he told me it was January and he was sitting there reading an article about the Wuhan outbreak. And he realized all of a sudden, holy cow, this is going to be dangerous. I think this is going to become a pandemic. And we have the technology that we've been developing for cancer, but I think we can pivot and we can use the same technology to fight the coronavirus. And we know how to make this vaccine. We've already been making them for cancer. And we have the technology to do this fast, and we have the responsibility to do that. And that's exactly what he did. He went into his team the next morning, he told me, and he sat them down and he said, we're going to make a vaccine and we're going to do it in less than a year. And they all said to him, you're crazy. We can't make a vaccine in less than a year. We make vaccines 5, 10, 15 years. He said, nope, we're going to call this Operation Lightspeed, and we're going to go that fast to make this vaccine. And they started working literally 24-7. Everybody, they went to a three-shift, 24-hour schedule, and they went like crazy. And that's because they were ready, and they weren't the only ones. The other, there was Jonathan Heaney had a pan-flu vaccine that he was working on. The team in China had been working on an Ebola vaccine. They used the same technology for coronavirus. So that was the thing that really hit me. These scientists, they didn't know it, but they were ready.
In that sequence, there's a beautifully animated part that explains visually how the mRNA fights the virus. Can you describe it for listeners? This is radio, but I wonder if you could describe how mRNA works on a virus.
Well, you're asking the English major to do science. Okay, let me do my best. First of all, a shout out to Mark Alberts, who made those amazingly beautiful animations. There's three of them in the film, and they are stunning. The way that RNA works, as I understand it, is it's a piece of DNA, half the DNA strand, so it's RNA, which is from the spike protein, which is on the coronavirus. So basically what they're doing is they're taking a little bit of the genetic makeup, a little bit of some of the genes from the spike. They put it into a, literally they call it a bubble. It's a little particle, a nanoparticle that encases that little bit of RNA, and they inject it into our body, and the bubble has the capabilities to connect with our cell and transfer that RNA into one of our cells in our body. The cell itself acts like a little manufacturing facility, and it takes that little code and it uses that code to manufacture little harmless pieces of the spike protein from the coronavirus. Those spike proteins, those harmless spike proteins, leave the cell and end up circulating around our body, and it cues our immune system to prepare for the coronavirus when it strikes us. So it's using our own cells to manufacture basically the medicine that we need to alert our immune system to get ready. And that's what primes us and protects us should we one day encounter the coronavirus.
Very interesting. One project that didn't quite work out, for Canada at least, is the CanSino Biologics project headed by Dr. Yu Shui Feng. So it was originally a collaboration between Canada and China in testing a vaccine, but something went awry. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, so we had to do a lot of digging to try to understand it, and I have to say that we don't know the full story, but we do understand that Canada had agreed to collaborate with CanSino, which is in Tianjin, China. There's a lot of connections between that company and Canada. Their CEO got his PhD at McGill University in Montreal and had worked here for a decade. So he had lots of contacts here. And the idea was that he brings his technology over here, does some of his phase three trials here, and then would manufacture some of his vaccine. We think the idea was to manufacture it here in Canada. But as everybody in Canada knows, there's been a bit of an ongoing battle, which is now over, between China and Canada when it comes to the two Michaels and the Chinese executive that was under house arrest in Vancouver. And nobody confirms this for us, but we think that that might have had something to do with China's unwillingness to allow CanSino to actually export its test vaccine to Canada. So it couldn't get its test vaccine out of the country, so the idea of doing phase three trials here didn't work out, and the ability to actually manufacture some of their vaccine here, that also didn't work out. So there was no longer the opportunity for that vaccine to be manufactured in Canada. And actually, the whole process slowed CanSino down. They were out front, leading the race with their technology, and then they encountered this bump, and that slowed them down. As we know now, it was BioNTech with their partners Pfizer that "quote unquote" won the race.
So we're running out of time, but briefly, what was the most surprising thing you encountered or learned in the making of this documentary?
You know, Daniel, the thing that really stuck with me was something that Ugur Shaheen told me when I did my interview with him. He said, we need, you know, billions of doses of vaccine, and Pfizer-BioNTech can't do that on their own. What was clear to me is that the race is not over. In fact, there are at least 300 vaccines currently in development. And the message that we got from all these scientists was, we need more vaccines to be manufactured, to get out into the world. At the moment, about 27 million people are getting vaccinated every day around the world, but 4.3 billion have yet to receive a single dose. And part of the reason is we need more vaccines to be manufactured by more companies and to get out to the world, because we need people to be vaccinated to stop this constant mutation that's taking place with the coronavirus as it tries to continue to survive. And the only way really we're going to stop the mutation, having to deal with Delta variant and then the next variant, is to get as many people as possible vaccinated. So that's the big thing that stuck with me. The race we thought was over is not over. It's still underway, and it's important that other vaccines get produced.
Thanks so much for talking with me, Dugald.
Thank you, Daniel. My pleasure.
Producer and writer Dugald Maudsley's documentary Inside the Great Vaccine Race is now streaming on The Nature of Things on CBC Gem. This is Daniel Garber, the movies, each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.